Welcome, everyone, to episode 276 of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to look at some of the top early season surprises and determine whether they are for real and are going to continue, or whether they are going to go back to the pack. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian, because I was actually reminded of a comment I made about 18 months ago when you and I were recording. I was like, you know what? I think Damian Lillard is the second best point guard in the league. And he's better than Russell Westbrook. And you're like, that's debatable. And now I think it's so clearly the case. I mean, with Steph out, Dame is the best point guard in the league, right?
I would agree, but I would also argue that Damian Lillard 18 months ago was a different player than he is now.
Better. Was he, though?
A better player. Yeah, oh my God, he's significantly better than he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, yes. I don't know if it's like better. I think he was always this good. I think he's just unleashed himself a little bit more.
Well, that
it's the same playing style.
Yeah, it's the same playing style. I mean, I think he's better in traffic this year.
That's fair. He has been. Like, he's been carving up defenses in a way he probably has not done so before. Yeah. I like his stake of basically taking ownership in the team, of saying, you know, we're a new team. We have so many new faces. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some issues, like there are injuries and chemistry is not where it's supposed to be yet, and he's just taking over. Like, yeah. I'm the steady force. I love it.
I mean, kudos to Dame. 60, a career high 60 points last night, unfortunately ended in a 119-115 loss to the Brooklyn Nets, because the Blazers can't go a game without having a front court player get hurt. Last night it was Scala Bissieri, so they're down to like literally Hassan Whiteside, Anthony Tolliver, and that is it.
Ugh. Yeah. Oh, that's so tough. This is where Nasir Little is probably going to get some minutes.
He got some last night. He played 19.
Yep. But, well, yeah, like an extended run here on out. Yeah.
Yeah, he has to. It's brutal. So get healthy, Blazers.
Can I just read Dame's season line so far? And I know, like, there's the caveat of just having played 9 games. Mm-hmm. 33.3 points a game.
Yeah.
5 boards, 6.9 assists, 91% from the line, 40 from three, almost 50 from the field. He's almost in the 50-40-90 club. And again, to reiterate, 33.3 points a game.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal. Let's start with surprises in the West, because you have had some bloodthirsty jackals at your throat for the last few weeks as you express skepticism about the Phoenix Suns, who are 5-3 this year. Correct. They have beaten the Los Angeles Clippers with Kawhi. Or did Kawhi play that game? I might be making that up.
They just basically pounded the paint and won it there. That's where they exposed the Clippers' lack of big man depth.
Correct. Yes. They beat the Sixers, and then their other wins against Sacramento, against the Golden State MASH units, which is what I'm calling them for the rest of the year, and the Grizzlies. They have lost overtime, 1 point at Denver, lost to Utah by 1 point, and then Thursday, 124-108 to Miami. It was their first, like, not competitive loss of the year, but still. Right. 5-3. We talked about them like 2 weeks ago. They're in the midst of this 6-game home stretch, which we said was going to tell us a lot about them. They still have Brooklyn, Lakers, Hawks, and Celtics left. But then their schedule softens up considerably for the next few weeks. So are you taking the Suns for real, Mort?
See, that's a loaded question, though, because for real is so many different things. Like, we talked about them briefly last time around, and you know, I compared them to Sacramento of last year. I think they're going to have, like, they're going to be this blip on the radar, and then next year there's potentially a downfall again, unless they recognize what they did well this year. Now, I keep thinking out loud about DeAndre Ayton.
Mm-hmm.
and his lack of a presence on the team. You know, when he was there, they would make a concerted effort in getting him the ball, and he would work it around. And, you know, it was very DeAndre Ayton focused, mm-hmm. I feel like. Now with Aaron Baines, like, yeah, he took 17 shots against Miami the other night, but it's not the same type of shots as Ayton, if you catch my drift. Yeah. Like, it's not because they're force-feeding him and he has to, like, take four or five dribbles and then create something in the paint. Like, it's spot-up threes. It's, like, garbage buckets, like, offensive rebounding. It's like, a whole different wide variety of shots that he puts up, and they come all within the flow of the offense. Mm-hmm. I think there's a level of truth in the fact that they're just playing more freely. Like, they have several wings who can contribute. They have a lot of guard play. And they're basically allowing the perimeter players to handle the show, which is something they should have done ages ago. And it seems to be working for them.
You know what else helps?
Let's hear it.
When Aaron Baines shoots 47% from three.
Oh, come on. You love Aaron Baines.
I like, no player in the NBA triggers me more than Aaron Baines. I can't. I every time... When they played the Sixers the other night, the announcers were just, like, mortified every time he shot. Because they're like, it looks so ugly, and yet you know it's going in. And he shot 3 of 5 from deep from against them. Because, of course, he did. But
I don't know why you have so much beef with the leprechaun. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's the Irish in me, I guess. But, I mean, look, the Suns have the 6th best net rating in the NBA right now. They're 8th in offense, 11th in defense. I think the defense is what's doing it. More than the offense has been great. Devin Booker's been great. Stupid Leprechaun's been great. Kelly Oubre Jr. has been excellent as well to start the season. But the
Ricky
fact,
Rubio.
Yeah, Ricky Rubio. Yeah. I mean, again, kudos to Gerald, who we had on from the step back for our Pacific Division preview, who said, like, look, we know Ricky Rubio's flaws, and he's shooting 37% from the field this year. This is the full Ricky Rubio experience, but just having a competent league average point guard. I'm not saying Ricky Rubio is necessarily just, like, baseline replacement level. He might be a little bit above that, but, you know, yeah. He's not Damian Lillard, but he's just a competent point guard. But that is such an upgrade over what the Suns have had for the past few years. That makes an enormous difference for this team.
Yeah, and have you noticed his rebounding numbers?
Yeah.
I mean, the way that, and especially on the defensive end, like, he gets them and he just starts to run. Great. And I feel like I feel like Ricky understands, because he's a smart player. Like, he has his faults. He's not a great shooter and all that. But he understands that he has to adjust to stay in the league. And one of the ways the league has changed is when you get a rebound, almost regardless if you're a center or a power forward or whatever the hell you are these days, you just dribble that ball up immediately. Like, the olden days of, I'm a big, I go get the rebound and I hand it to the point guard who sets it up nice and quiet. Those days are gone and dead. Like, he gets it and he runs up the court and starts to initiate stuff. I love it. I mean, he's found a way to be effective without being necessarily an efficient shooter. So he's found a way to still be a plus offensively. And defensively, we know what he can do there. He's just a pest.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's out-rebounding the Leprechaun. He's out-rebounding their starting center. So that's impressive. I mean, I'm with you in thinking, because of the level of organizational dysfunction that has plagued them, and as we say, it always starts at the very top with the owner, right? You always have to be prepared for something to go wrong, even if you start a season well, or even if you're the Kings last year and you manage to just be surprisingly good the whole year. Maybe you fire your coach and then you install a coach who runs a system completely opposite of what you're supposed to do the next season, and then you go off to a slow start. Not saying that Monty Williams is in danger of being fired. If anything, I think he's done an excellent job so far. He's, you know, right. Hopefully he's there for a long time and they continue to be good. But just because of the history with that team under the current owner, you just always have to have one foot out of the water just in case Because you never know, like, something, you just have to brace yourself for something to go wrong. So, like, for Suns fans, I hope this is the new trend for you guys. Like, you deserve to have a competent basketball team. Every NBA fan does. It sucks to root for teams that have no chance of digging out.
I'm not sure who you're talking to, because I think we lost so many Suns fans recently. Very, very upset of us.
I know. I tried to stay a little more optimistic. I think they're legitimately, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs this year. I'm not ready to go that far. I think they are a competent basketball team this year. I think they could very well finish in the 35 win range this year, which is higher than most people expected coming into the year, myself included even.
Yeah, much higher. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's great. Like, that's the sign of progress you need when you're, you know, that's what you needed coming into the season, especially if you're giving all this money to Ricky Rubio and you're making trades for Cam Johnson and giving up Jarrett Culver and, like, you know, Dario Saric, you got to figure out what you're doing with him next year. There's a lot of big decisions coming up for the Suns.
Right.
This is a promising start. We'll see what happens, but I think, you know, I don't think you can look at the Suns on your schedule anymore and be like, oh, that's an easy win. Like, you can do that with the Knicks. You can do that with, you know, we thought you could do that with the Hornets. We'll get to them later. You can do that with the Wizards this year. You can't do that with the Suns.
I will draw the line at some point, though, because I've seen Suns fans tell me that, see, the selection of Cam Johnson at 11 wasn't a bad one because we're winning.
No.
Like, that does not compute. That doesn't make any sense. Like, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I think that's part of the backlash from my perspective. I think Suns fans have been just a little too, oh, we gave away players for free and grabbed players, you know, that really had no business being picked 11th. Like, and it's all fine and dandy. Like, no, this can still end up biting you in the ass.
Yeah.
And not because I wanted to, but I'm just saying that's a reach.
Right. I think that's a really good point to bring up, that we could still be lukewarm on some of their offseason moves, and I'm still concerned that it affects their long-term trajectory. Right. You know, Cam Johnson, are people really crowing about Cam Johnson? He's averaging 5.5 points a game.
Obviously, it's there's this hashtag, I think it's like the Valley Suns or something. Like, Valley Strong or whatever. And there are some really insane takes on that one, and it's I don't remember who said this. We have this group chat going, but you know, we actually I pointed this out in our group chat, and someone said, well, if you're used to eating raw cabbage years, like, you're given a burger, it's gonna taste like your filet mignon. I think it's encouraging that they're doing well. I think their fan base actually deserved this, because they've been going through such a hard time. But that doesn't mean I necessarily have a lot of faith in the governorship and necessarily James Jones.
Yeah, and if anything, I'm worried now that if they do, let's say they finish around 500 this year,
mm-hmm.
I'm worried that they do think that this is the time to go all in and then make some rash decisions next summer when the free agent class is terrible. And they could grow to regret that immensely.
Well, the good news is Cameron Johnson will be in his prime by then.
Oh, that's brutal. Okay, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the Dallas Mavericks, who are also 5-3, suffered a tough loss to the New York Knicks in Kristaps Porzingis's would-be revenge game. But they did beat the Denver Nuggets in Denver. That's their most impressive win so far. Their other ones are Washington at New Orleans, at Cleveland, beat Orlando by 1 point. Their two losses, aside from the Knicks, lost at home to Portland by 2 and lost to the Lakers in overtime when Luka and LeBron went mano a mano. So I was lukewarm on the Mavericks playoff chances coming into the year. I'm having immense regrets about that, especially given what's happened to Golden State. They are clearly out of the mix, so there's at least one spot open. Do you think the Mavericks have a chance of claiming that spot, Mort?
Hell yes. I was very weirded out by you being lukewarm on them, because you had been banging the two stars drum for well over a year and a half. And then you have Doncic and Porzingis, and you're like, nah, no, they don't have the depth. Whereas, like, no, it's streamlined. They finally have, like, the two top-tier guys, and then everyone falls in line. That's exactly what happened. Right. By the way, I'm so glad that there were 11 games on the schedule last night. Mm-hmm. And the one that I picked was the Dallas game against New York. And I know that the Knicks are just... I was actually fun watching the Knicks for a change because they were making shots. That's a rarity for them. I saw Luka get a career high. Yeah. And the way that he did it... Here's the thing. Bobby Carella, a friend of the podcast, said something on Twitter which was really interesting. And I totally agree with him. He was like... You know, Luka right now, I think they were going into the third quarter, and he was like, Luka has 32 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists, and he's not really playing all that well. Mm-hmm. Like, this is where they are. And I agree with him. Luka ended up having a career-high in points and a triple-double, but his game was somewhat pedestrian. Mm-hmm. That is insane.
Eight turnovers,
he made some, and he had a questionable shot selection. Like, there were a couple of times where you're like, Luka, what the hell? Like, take one more step in to the three-point line. You don't have to shoot, like, a Trae Young logo three. But, outside of that, he was just in complete control of what he wanted to do. Like, if he wanted to get to a certain spot on the court, he could. Mm-hmm. Every single time, and the way that he just... negotiate screens and the way he can extend himself when he's on drives. And look, this idea, and I mentioned this a gazillion times already, this idea that Luka was somehow close to his ceiling coming in last year was always dumb.
Yes.
Because what you and I, we banked this drum so hard, we said the players with high level of basketball intelligence will always have a higher ceiling. They will always find a way to get there. And Luka, despite some questionable shots and some sometimes erratic passes, again, he's still 20. And people are like, oh, this is where his age shows. Yeah, but in all other facets of the game, he's still wildly ahead of any other 20-year-old. Like, don't get it twisted. This dude is absolutely for real. He's averaging 28 points a game, 10.4 rebounds, and 9.3 assists.
Oh, is that good?
He's not... I think that's kind of good for a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I guess so.
A little bit. I mean, the biggest weakness for him right now is his three-point shot, and it's because the shots that he takes has such a high degree of difficulty. I mean, that those step-back shots are not easy. Mm-hmm. Like, we look at James Harden, we go, oh, okay, he hits them on a regular basis. That does not mean it's easy.
Right,
it's an incredible difficult shot. The step-back three is arguably the toughest shot in basketball.
Yeah, just or like a off the dribble, especially. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
players.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, but like moving away from the basket and almost like in Luka's case, almost fading away a little bit on it.
Yeah,
like, geez. So he's shooting 31.9%, which absolutely needs to be improved. Mm-hmm. But when he's just receiving the ball in catch and shoot situation, I don't have the numbers in front of me, admittedly, but I've seen a lot of Mavs games this year, and it's just off the top of my head, it's so much better.
Yeah,
I can look it up later on, and if I'm wrong, I'll make a correction on the next pod. But I'm pretty sure his catch and shoot numbers are significantly better. And it's just a matter of maturity. And for the Mavs to lose this game, I also saw the other game that they lost against Portland, and that was like that came off a coach's challenge. Mm-hmm. That was not necessarily the right call.
Right. Though against Portland.
Correct. Yeah. Where Dame came in. It's a couple weeks. There's been a lot of NBA games over the past week, so I don't remember in vivid detail, but Dame came in and had his hands on the ball or something. I don't even remember what happened right now, but it was a bad call. I remember watching the replay several times over. Mm-hmm. They just look good. Luka's chemistry with Porzingis is just unflappable, and Maxi Kleber is just... He's been a real X factor for him. He's been like their third guy, not in terms of scoring, but just like in doing all types of weird things, like getting offensive rebounds, setting really good screens, getting into the paint, catching lobs, making sound passes generally, blocking shots. Like, he's just been a terrific all-around guy to have. So it's funny to me that the three best players on this team so far are in the Nationals.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean... My concerns about the Mavericks coming into the season, you're right. I've been pounding the two-star model for a while, and I was very, very high on the Luka-Kristaps pairing in particular. And so far, that has borne out correct. They've been great. Last night is a bit of what I was concerned about, though, because those two guys combined for 24 made shots. The correct. Mavericks as a team had 37. So
right.
The other, let's see, 11 guys suited up. So the other 9 guys combined for 13 made shots and a 4-point loss. And, you know, that remains a concern for me. Like, they haven't gotten nearly as much out of Seth Curry as I thought they would. He's shooting 40% or 40.7% from three, but he's only averaging 19 minutes a game. He went scoreless last night against the Knicks, had zero shot attempts in 13 minutes last night. DeLon Wright has not been providing as much offense as you would hope, given, you know, they signed him, I think it was like 3 years, $27 million, I want to say. They still just don't have that reliable complementary source of offense. And, you know, maybe they never will. And maybe you're just not sure who's going to have it. Like, someone will have it on some nights. I mean, but, you know, then it falls down to, like, Tim Hardaway Jr. took 15 shots last night, which I don't think you necessarily want.
No, so. That's because he wanted a revenge game, too.
Yeah, of course. I know. It was really just a Kristaps and Tim Hardaway revenge game. And Courtney Lee took one shot in 5 minutes.
So it's funny because after the game, I couldn't help but, like, play a scenario in my head a little bit because Frankie Smokes played well for the Knicks.
Mm,
yep. But I think we can agree that in New York, he's not really been valued.
No, God, no.
I still think if you made an offer for him, I think he's attainable is kind of my point. I think he's definitely attainable. And you don't like need to...
Every player on the Knicks is attainable aside from RJ Barrett.
Right, but I mean, like, realistically, I don't think you need to make a huge offer to get Frank.
No. I mean, at this point, the Knicks would be lucky to get a first-round pick, but the Mavericks also don't have much to give up because they gave up so much for Kristaps.
And that's the thing. I think what they need to look for are deals where they can get guys in that don't necessarily cost all that much, maybe be due to, you know, disappointments or whatever. But a guy like Frank Ntilikina.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell me that Rick Carlisle can't get more out of him than the Knicks can.
Last
night. Like, I don't know. You probably saw the Sixers Nuggets.
We're not talking about that game.
Frankie Smokes was hitting threes and working the game. He looked good.
Yeah, four like this steals, was one of those games too.
Pardon?
Four steals and three blocks as well. I mean,
correct.
That was just
he was
well-rounded
a beast.
Game. Yeah.
Yes. Like, that could be their first guy. He's the guy I think they should target.
Yeah, I mean,
because he's not a heavy volume shooter.
Right. Yeah, I just think they need one other guy in that supporting cast to either become a consistent source of offense, or they need to get someone to give that. Because, like, you can't... I mean, Luka and Kristaps are both great, but, like, what happens if one of those guys have an off night?
That's the thing. I think there is significantly more potential to Frankie Smokes than the Knicks have realized. I think they tried to pigeonhole him into a sort of defensive-oriented type of point guard slash off guard. And I don't think that's his game necessarily. I think he's way more offensively inclined than the Knicks realize.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if the Mavericks tried to add someone in the coming months. I just don't know, because they gave up so much for Kristaps, it'll be tough, as we mentioned, to get, you know, a real difference maker. But yeah, I mean, buying low on a guy like Frankie Smokes would be a great play for them. And I think that's the type of thing they need to be sniffing around for sure, especially if they're trying to make the playoffs this year. I mean, so I don't want to say I'm buying in necessarily to the Mavs, because again, like, they've beaten four teams, you know, aside from the Denver win, the other four teams they've beaten have all gotten off to a very slow start this season. You know, they get Memphis tonight. They get Boston on Monday, then Knicks, Raptors, Spurs, Warriors. So I mean, they're not going to have, you know, they're not going to have too much to prove either way in the next week and a half or so. Like, I just don't think we're going to learn much about, like, they're, I think they'll beat Memphis, they'll beat the Knicks, they'll beat the Warriors. Boston, Toronto, San Antonio will be telling.
Here's the thing, though. Momentum matters. Yeah. I think even if you win against bad teams early on, I think that can carry you into wins against better teams.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's just a matter of getting that W and getting that rhythm on you, like going into the locker room, like, yeah, we got this. Now, we're like the Mavs right now, even though I totally agree with you, they can look themselves in the eyes and go, look, we're 5-3. We should be 6-2. Like, we're right there.
Yeah.
We're right there. And we just lost a dumb game to the Knicks. That should have been a win. It wasn't because they had Bobby Portis was playing out of his mind for a stretch, and that just changed the game for New York. Mm-hmm. Like, that's and that's a swing thing. Like, Bobby, he's one of those guys. He'll do it on occasion.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It was just like a rarity. So they could brush that off and just go, you know, 6-2, or 5-3 should be 6-2.
Yeah,
go from there. I mean, this is also why, you know, Bulls fans are painting the walls red with blood these days. It's because they just lost to a whole bunch of bad teams early on, and now the schedule is going to be insane.
Right.
So, you know, getting those first couple wins down, as the Mavs did, that just allowed them a level of freedom that a team like Chicago can't afford right now because they messed up.
Yeah,
so
I mean, right.
It's about that. It's just about momentum.
That's what playoff teams do. You beat bad teams. That's what the Spurs have done for years. You handle your business against bad teams. If you go 500 against good teams, that's 45 wins. You're in the playoffs.
Right.
But if you, it's the losing to bad teams repeatedly, that adds up, and those are the games that come back to bite you. So, you know, this is their first, for the Mavericks, this is their first, like, really bad loss of the year. We'll see how they bounce back tonight against Memphis. I haven't seen whether Kristaps is even playing. I know it's the second night of a back-to-back. So if he doesn't, that will be time for one of my stress tests about them is, you know, Luka's going to be great because he's always great, but who comes up as that supporting member to give him enough offense to beat? I know it's a Memphis team that is very young and inexperienced and has gotten clobbered more often than not this year, but you still can't take them lightly, especially if Kristaps is out.
So is this your way of segueing into load management?
we could hit on that quickly.
It's not like we teased folks on Twitter with it. No. Okay. I have something to say about load management, Brian.
Please do.
Whatever the player needs.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, this has been discussed ad nauseam over the last few days on Twitter. So we're not going to go far into it. It came up with Kawhi because he rested Wednesday night against the Bucks and then played Thursday against the Blazers. I will say this. The fact that the NBA approved Kawhi sitting because they agree with the Clippers that he is dealing with a nagging injury or an ongoing injury, and then fining the Clippers because Doc Rivers said he feels fine, he's healthy, whatever, that I have an issue with.
Correct.
Because what do you want Doc Rivers to say?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a reporter, it is their job to ask about Kawhi, especially if he's resting. So Doc Rivers could say, oh yeah, he's had this issue for 6 months and it hasn't gone away, and that's going to cause everyone to freak out.
Correct.
So the alternative is downplaying the concern and just say, yeah, he's fine. We're just being proactive and resting him, which is that's fine. Kawhi Leonard missed almost an entire season because of a quad injury. He comes back. He has an injury to his other knee now, which Sam Amick of The Athletic and others have reported that the Raptors staff believe came from overcompensating for the quad injury. And now he had, you know, that left knee injury came up in the playoffs this year. 6 months later, he still is dealing with effects of it. If he doesn't want to play back-to-backs, that's cool. We saw this plan work last year. Like, I just don't get why people on Twitter, like people, you know, like talking heads in sports media are like, we know the answer to how this guy should be playing. Like, we don't know Kawhi, how he's feeling. We are not Kawhi Leonard. I trust a professional athlete to know their body better than anyone else because they have put in so much work to their body over the years to reach the peak that they are in right now. Right. That if they know, they should not be playing 35 minutes one night and then the next night. That's cool. I want to go into the playoffs this year and have everyone healthy because we always bemoan come mid-April when someone got hurt. I was like, oh man, this would have been great if this guy and this guy and this guy was healthy.
Yep.
If he's going to miss, I get the argument, like, it sucks for fans, especially if it's a road game. It sucks if it's, like, the one chance that people in Milwaukee could have seen Kawhi Leonard or whatever. But, like, I get it. But, you know, a couple years ago, I flew to Denver to go see a Sixers-Nuggets game. Joel Embiid did not play that night. Was I bummed? Sure. But the Sixers still played. I still got to see Ben Simmons and Robert Covington and a bunch of other guys who I liked. The Sixers won. I had fun. It was an enjoyable experience. Like, if you're buying a ticket just to see one player, maybe don't do that. But if you're going to, like, go see a basketball game and go admire professional athletes being really good at what they do, then you should be able to enjoy it regardless of who plays and doesn't play.
I really only have one thing to say to all the talking heads who complain, because I've noticed that there are certain similarities in the people who say these things, and it's okay, boomer.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, I get it. I mean, I think the players from the 80s and 90s who are like, if I, you know, I played 40 minutes a game, and this came up with Fizdale and RJ Barrett recently too, because he was like, you know, RJ Barrett played 42 minutes one game. People are like, that's probably not a great idea. And he's like, whatever, he's 19, back in my day. Like, well, you know, the NBA is more physically taxing now. I know it's not like the hand-checking rules are gone, so you can't, like, physically beat opponents up like you could back in the day. But there's so much more motion in offenses now. It's not just four people standing around and posting up. It's like,
right, it's more pressure on joints.
Yeah, you're running off of screens and banging in the bodies on every possession. Like, there's a reason.
And you're turning and you're flipping. Your ankles are so much more under pressure than compared to just 10 years ago.
Right, for sure. So, yeah, like, going through a screen as someone is running full speed and curling behind of that and for a dribble handoff or for a pass, and if you're a second late, he's going to pull up for a three-pointer and drain it in your face. So you have to go full steam ahead through that screen. Mm-hmm. Like, the NBA is physically demanding. And, like, you don't appreciate it necessarily to the full extent when it's on TV. But, like, when you're there and when you see it up close, you're like, holy God. Like, even just a battle for a rebound. Every time these guys go up for a rebound, when it's a contested rebound, like, oh my. I can't tell you the number of times if I was an NBA player, I'd be on the floor just, like, out. I would just not get up. Even when they go up for, like, a layup and get fouled and hit the deck hard, it's like, he's just falling, like, from 6 feet in the air onto hard wood. That sounds really painful.
Right, and everyone is grabbing rebounds these days. So it's not, you know, in back in the day where the rebounding battle was left to the bigs, now instead of fighting one guy, you're fighting five guys.
Yeah.
Like, it's because everyone is being asked to, like, gang rebound now, and everyone is asked to participate. Like, even if you're a point guard nowadays, if you don't rebound worth a damn, a coach will take you aside and go, you need to help out on the glass.
Right.
Like, it's just, you are expected to do more. Like, look, if you look at today's pre-draft process, when we are, you know, as analysts looking at players, with the type of faults that we are finding with players now compared to 10 years ago,
they are
so vastly different. It's like, well, this guy doesn't screen all that well. Whereas before, 10 years ago, it's like, okay, this guy can't hit the side of a barn from 5 feet.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, so it comes down to this expectation of players having, you know, already needing to be all-around players when they enter the league at the age of 19 and 20. And we sit here being surprised at all the injuries that they succumb to.
Like, right.
Big whoop. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
It's a different way of playing. And the old guys, both former players and talking heads, who are very, very, like, gray-haired at this point, they just, look, they don't understand. At some level, some of those talking heads, they just stop realizing that the game has changed. They get stubborn and they think basketball is basketball and it's nothing else than that. And that's so far from the truth. I mean, and to, you know, I have the perfect example of why load management works.
Kawhi Leonard,
and I'm actually going to be writing about this for Forbes later on today or tomorrow, I think. Kawhi is right now averaging 29 points, 8.1 rebounds, 5.4 assists, by far a career high, 2.1 steals, 1.1 block in 30.9 minutes.
It's pretty good.
That is pretty damn good. He has a career high PER of 32.
Yeah.
He's basically never played better, or he's never been more productive, is my point, because the defense is still there.
Right, right.
This would not have happened had he not been load managed last year and partly this year. This is a way of just keeping him prepared and healthy and productive, and this is the best way to go about it. So essentially what the talking heads are saying is, we would rather see a Kawhi Leonard who's playing like at a 40% capacity than seeing him being this all-world beater that he is right now, right, which is just dumb.
Yeah. I mean, Kawhi Leonard himself told Rachel Nichols of ESPN last year during the finals, I would not be here if I did not get load managed during the season.
Right.
Just listen to these guys. Like, they're not BSing. It's just smart. We can't have people 2 years ago when Tom Thibodeau was playing guys 38 minutes a night, we're all saying they're playing too much. They should, you know, he should lean on his bench more. You can't have that and then also say, oh, these guys should not, they should be playing more. They should not be resting games. Pick one lane or the other. But if you're arguing that Tom Thibodeau overtaxed his guys, you can't be arguing that load management's a bad idea.
Right. And this is where I've also been more educated on the subject, because I used that example back in the day. I specifically remember I pointed to Tim Duncan, who used to play a ton of minutes. Like, if Tim could do it with a bad leg, then everyone could do it. But then, you know, my understanding of the game grew, and I realized, you know, all the twists and turns, and especially for, you know, even you know, simple shooting guards who are 3-point specialists, really. Like, they have to run around screens, and when they pivot and like move themselves into jump shot rhythm coming off of screens, that is so taxing on so many joints. So I just started realizing, like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Every player in the league right now could greatly benefit from being load managed. This should be like football. Yeah. And my football.
Right, right.
Where you actually have, and I've been preaching this for a little while now, dynamic starting lineups, or basically just dynamic lineups, where you really go about it in the way that you don't BS the league and you don't need to put up like, oh, this guy's out with a fake back injury, where you just say, no, this is rest. Whereas, right. And you make it normal to the point where the league doesn't interfere, or where talking heads don't make it a priority. Like, if a football team is sitting someone because they feel he's played way too much lately, that is universally accepted. But somehow in basketball, even though it's a way more taxing sport from an individual perspective, no, nada. You have to play. You have to be tough. Let's go get him 1960 style. Right. What the hell?
Right. Yeah, it's just, and look, not only are you getting your guys rest, but you're giving other guys in your rotation opportunities during the regular season that they might not otherwise have. And you don't know when that's going to come back to benefit you. But, you know, we talk about it in the playoffs every year. There's always some playoff game swung by, like, a no-name ninth man. And it's like, if that guy isn't getting minutes at all during the regular season, if a coach is running an eight-man rotation because he's overtaxing his starters and doesn't believe in spreading the wealth a little bit, he's not necessarily going to have that ninth man to call upon. Whereas, you know, Steve Kerr, like, he got made fun of all the time for, you know, his Kumbaya Kerr moniker, for leaning on a deep rotation in the regular season, even though he had Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant. But more often than not, it paid off because he had guys who he knew, okay, well, if, God forbid, if anything happens to my star four, then we have this eighth man off the bench who I know can produce and who is played with his teammates in regular season action. Like, he has experience in live game settings. Mm-hmm. Is only going to behoove him come April, May, and June. So I get the arguments against load management, especially from a fan perspective, and like we have to know.
Well, screw that. I'm gonna piss people off right now, but screw fans. Fans don't know.
It's a slippery slope.
But they're consumers.
Yeah.
Look, me as a consumer, I don't know everything I need to know about everything I buy.
That's true.
I mean, overall, that's when if a casual fan walks into a game and doesn't understand that, oh, this certain player has been suffering from leg injuries for the past 3 or 4 years, and that makes him a prime candidate to get significantly injured and be out for a year.
Right.
And you're like, oh, they want to see him. I don't even care if he breaks a leg in the fourth quarter because then I got my money's worth. Like, screw that.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. But, and your point about, you know, getting other guys' minutes, I don't know if this reference goes over the heads of a lot of people listening because this is an old-ass reference, but look, I mean, Eddie decided to play Nate Wilson over Stacey Patton, and it worked. Mm. If you know that, Eddie from 1996.
Flew right over my head.
Oh, you haven't seen the Whoopi Goldberg movie?
No.
Ah, all right. Basically, she sat a disgruntled star player and played an old-ass veteran who started to pick up steam.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So basically, your point of that guy becoming important down the line, that's what it comes to. I mean, if you're giving a guy more minutes and he can swing a playoff game.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I think to some extent it's notable that there was a lot of pushback from ESPN talking heads because the game was on ESPN. I don't think that was a coincidence. I get that it could be a slip. Like if guys started resting liberally, like if every superstar decided to sit out 40 plus games, then yeah, you know, then fans may be more reluctant to buy tickets because you're not sure when this guy is going to play or whether he's not. And I mean, maybe there's a better way to go about it. Like, if you're the Clippers and you're planning, if you know Kawhi Leonard is not going to play back-to-backs, announce it beforehand. But then again, fans aren't going to want to buy tickets to those games. So there's no perfect solution to this other than like get rid of back-to-backs, lengthen the schedule, and then you're at least removing the obstacle of, well, he's not going to sit because he's playing a back-to-back if there are no back-to-backs. The other thing, if I'm a TV network, I'm not televising both games of a back-to-back. That's because more likely than not, especially if you're doing it with the Clippers, you had to know Kawhi's probably sitting out one of those two games. So that's on you.
That's a very good point. Are you going to tell that to your bosses?
Nope. I sure won't.
Okay. But that's a very fair point. And, you know, I going into this podcast before we started recording, we're like, we shouldn't spend more than 5 minutes on this load management thing. But look, this is multi-layered.
Yeah.
And we need to break it down. And honestly, I've basically started tuning out, you know, people who are attacking a player.
Yeah.
Because it's so dumb. Like, if the mute and block button on my Twitter feed that's been used a lot recently.
It's been a rough start to the season for NBA Twitter.
It really has. It really has. NBA Twitter has been a little bit weird this year.
Not great. But let's get back to the surprises, because there's one other in the West I want to hit.
Oh, who?
The Minnesota Timberwolves.
That is interesting, yes. Andrew Wiggins has listened to what I had to say.
I was about to say, 40 points last night in an overtime win over the Golden State Warriors. 30 the night before, the game before, in their loss to the Memphis Grizzlies. He has been more productive this year than we have seen Andrew Wiggins be.
He is having a career year.
Yes.
There's no two ways about it. He's, he's just way more productive than ever before. He's taking significantly more threes, so he's leaning into that. He's still, you know, and not a great shooter. So he still has some ways to go in that department. And I would like to see him take a step up on a free throw efficiency as well. But, you know, that may come. It does seem like he's trending upwards, which, you know, we've been ridiculing him for years. But at the same time, we always said we hope that this turns into something for him that he be, you know, he turn, flips the page, is what I'm trying to say.
I've kept and one right toe now, on Andrew Wiggins Island. I was like, my the rest of my body was on the life raft, yep. But I have had one toe on there the whole time.
Yep, that's fair. I think I was completely off it,
yeah.
And now I'm in a rowboat, just trying to get back there just a little bit. but no, I like the way that he's played. He's not only been clutch, which he has been. I mean, I think maybe that's his role. Maybe just realizing, oh, okay, if I can be effective late in games, that just makes me a more layered player.
Right.
I still think there are a lot of things to his game that I want to see more of. Like, you know, he's 6'8" and superbly athletic. There's no reason he should be averaging under 5 rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I can live with everything else. Just up the rebounds, up the efficiency a little bit. But those are luxury items at this point. Yeah. If this is the new Wiggins, I'll take it. I'll gladly take it if I'm in Minnesota, because this is an above average starter.
Yeah, I mean, he's averaging a career high 24.6 points a game, shooting a career high 46.1% from the field. As you mentioned, right. He's averaging a career high 6.8 threes a game, only hitting 33.3% of them, but that means his two-point percentage is up to 52.3%. He had never cracked 48.6 before that. And I think this comes down to Ryan Saunders to some extent. I mean, obviously to Wiggins too, because he's improved, and that's great to see. But the schematic changes we've seen from Ryan Saunders, who, you know, during the offseason, a picture started circulating that the Timberwolves had a shot chart with points per possession in every area of the floor in their practice facility. Andrew Wiggins, over his first 5 years of his career, he took 13.8% of his shot attempts from 10 to 16 feet. He took 22.1% of his shot attempts from 16 feet to the three-point line. This year...
I know where you're going with this.
This year, he is at 7.9% from 10 to 16, 11.5% from 16 to three-point range. And he's been much more effective from those two areas of the floor. He shot only 36.5% from 10 to 16, 34.2% from 16 to three-point line. This year, he's at 46.2% from 10 to 16, 42.1% from 16 to the three-point line. So he's cut down on his volume of mid-range twos, and he's hitting them at a higher clip, which is usually a pretty good way to boost your scoring averages and your field goal percentage.
There's another part that I want to touch on with Wiggins, which I think is really, really impressive. So we're seeing him take a career high in the 3 points department, right?
Mm-hmm.
But only 61.1% of his made threes have been assisted.
Mm.
And before that, that number was at his lowest before was well over 75%.
Yeah.
That is huge. If he can create threes off the dribble and be just moderately effective with that shot, while just laying off of the mid-rangers and getting to the basket, we're looking at an entirely different player.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I hope this is sustainable. I want this to be for real.
Like,
Wiggins, he's still so young. I know so many people are out on him because it looked like he stagnated. He's 24. He doesn't turn 25 until the end of February. So it's like he is not even in his physical prime yet. Or if he is just entering it. He's still got, you know, a couple years to go before he's 27, 28 in his, like, real peak. I'm encouraged by what I've seen out of Andrew Wiggins so far. And, you know, it's for the Timberwolves, it just like a lot of these teams, like, it's just hard to say if it's for real or not because, you know, most of their wins have come against bad teams or against... You know, Brooklyn got off to a rough start. They've bounced back a little bit as of late. And so they beat Brooklyn in overtime the season opener. They pounded Charlotte. They beat Miami, which is a good win. Pounded the Wizards. Who cares? Beat the Warriors in overtime despite D'Angelo Russell's 52. If we shouted out Dame earlier, we got to shout out D'Angelo because that's like the best moral loss for the Warriors where D'Angelo plays well, boosts his trade value, and they lose. So they still get to boost their lottery odds.
Do you think Minnesota is even more intrigued now?
Yeah, I bet they are. That was just an audition.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns playing for well for the Timberwolves. Robert Covington, monster game. 17 points, 11 rebounds, 5 steals, 3 blocks, 2 threes. Fantasy god, that is Robert Covington. He will be on my fantasy teams every year until I die. They play Denver tonight, at Detroit tomorrow, and San Antonio, Washington, Houston, home and home against Utah and Phoenix. So, especially with Phoenix looking frisky, really, like, Washington's the gimme win there. I wouldn't even say Detroit's a gimme. They're competitive at least. So we'll learn a lot about how seriously to take this team in the next 2 weeks. But given the improvements from Wiggins so far, I'm at least encouraged. I think the Timberwolves belong in that conversation with the Mavericks as, you know, who's going to replace the Warriors in the playoffs? Or, I mean, hell, who's going to replace possibly the Portland Trailblazers in the playoffs if they continue not being able to field a healthy front court? Mavs and Timberwolves are looking good so far.
I'm probably prioritizing Dallas at this point because, it's been 8 games. I mean, I love what Wiggins is doing, but I don't think we should forget the 2 years prior to that.
Oh, no. Yeah. I
don't even regret, saying everything that I did over the past couple of years.
Yeah. You want a player to do something. You could see the upside in a player.
Yeah.
But you have to react to what's actually happening.
Correct. And that happened. Like, his decline or whatever, like his regression or whatever you want to call it, stagnation,
right,
absolutely happened. Like, right. Jimmy Butler arrived. He could not find a way to be that third guy. And in an optimal world, that would have been, the most efficient Andrew Wiggins ever.
Yeah. It should have been. Yeah.
And he just could not figure that out. And that's on him. That was always going to be on him. And then for some reason, like, even though Jimmy only was there for 10 games last year, he was, like, still rented out real estate in his mind or something because he was an even worse year.
Yeah.
For him to finally bounce back now, and it's a weird thing. I mean, I can't imagine it's all Butler. Just can't. I know a lot of Wolves fans were like, well, if Butler was there and he corrupted the young minds of Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, like, yeah, but you can't put it all on one guy. You just can't.
Right. No, I mean, I really do think Ryan Saunders deserves a lot of credit for this mini Wiggins resurgence. And, let's hope it continues. I'm very encouraged. I'm on Zillow right now, looking for property, just in case.
In Minnesota?
Yeah. Beachfront Andrew Wiggins Island property. Very, 80% off still, because I don't think people are quite... He hasn't gotten the national attention that I think he will if he keeps this up. So I'm bargain shopping now. I'm going to,
A beachfront in Minnesota. Okay. Yeah. That's going to be so warm in December.
Useful for 3 months a year.
Yeah.
Just like the Timberwolves.
Well, I mean, I get it. I didn't see where you were going with the Timberwolves when you said you had another surprise. I think it's interesting because I definitely, when the first name that you think about when you mention the Wolves, obviously that's Towns, who's been playing out of his damn mind.
Sure.
But I immediately in my mind also went to like Josh Okogie and Jared Culver. I mean, those guys aren't averaging big numbers, but they've been great defensively.
Yep.
And they've just given them this presence defensively along with Robert Covington, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can switch everything. They can guard point guards and shooting guards and athletic wings, even small bigs. Like, there's just so much versatility there. It seems like Wiggins and Towns have almost been given, like, okay, you guys just take care of the offense. Like, go average 50 together. And then everyone else just defends their ass off.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And it's kind of working.
Yeah. I mean, let's see. They're actually lower than I would have expected in terms of offensive rating. But we'll see. In 2 weeks, I think we'll know a lot more about the Timberwolves. But I think they should be very encouraged. If not, I mean, Towns, of course, is great. Like, that's no surprise. But Wiggins' hot start should have them feeling very good about the early Ryan Saunders, official Ryan Saunders era, I should say, because he,
right,
you know, he did coach last year as well. But this offseason was his chance to really put his imprint on the team, and I think we have seen that to some extent in the early going. So kudos.
So you don't have the New Orleans Pelicans as a positive surprise? Because I don't.
Unfortunately, no. And we're not going to talk like the Lakers are great, the Nuggets are great, the Clippers are great, the Jazz are great. None of those are surprises. The Spurs are great. Still not a surprise. The one surprise is that LeBron James is playing defense in the regular season, which you were very skeptical of, but it's also only 8 games into the regular season.
Hey, man, look, whatever China pays him to do.
Oh, boy. Let's finish off then, Mort, with one team in the East, because we could talk about Miami. Like, we hit the Kendrick Nunn stuff separately a few episodes ago. You know, they're 6-3, which is better than I think people expected. Like, I don't think people had them as the number 3 seed in the East coming into the year, but they're not significantly better. I think we can hit them in a future episode. The Charlotte Hornets, I think, are significantly better than anyone expected coming into the year, because, you know, they entered the year, I forget what their over under was, but I know it was in the mid-20s. Like, they lost Kemba Walker, of course. They lost Jeremy Lamb. You know, getting Terry Rozier, everyone was like, oh, we have the bet. Is he going to shoot 40% from the field this year? Which says all you need to know about the...
Currently, he's not.
Oh, no. Terry, you're letting me... Oh, after the Boston game. Well, that was...
Scary Terry is shooting 38.5% from the field right now.
That was inevitable. There is no way he was going to perform well in the Boston game. But he'll come... I got faith in you, Terry. Don't let me down. Yeah, he was 1 of 11. Oh, boy. Here's what I do want to mention for the Charlotte Hornets. Devontae Graham. He is their best point guard. And
correct.
I don't think it's a hot take to say that.
I don't even think it's a hot take to argue he's their best player right now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talked about, like, Monte Morris coming out of nowhere last year. Devontae Graham averaged 4.7 points in 14.7 minutes for the Hornets last year, who obviously had Kemba Walker, so of course he didn't get much run. This year, he is averaging 17 points, 7 assists, nearly 4 rebounds, nearly 3 threes, and 31 minutes a game.
He is actually, if you look at his college numbers over his last year in Kansas, it's almost the same numbers.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. He's been great. He's been
really good.
And he's got a little bit of Kemba to his game. Like, obviously, he is not Kemba Walker. I'm not saying that.
Breaking news. Brian Zaporik says that Devontae Graham is the next Kemba Walker.
Well, I had picked him up in fantasy very early on in the season when I saw what he was doing. So, for my team, he's Kemba Walker because I have no point guards who are good. His step-back threes, in particular, or his, like, off-the-dribble creation, it just... bears a resemblance to Kemba, which I like a lot. But he's not the only notable story in Charlotte. Miles Bridges playing very well, shooting 50% from the field after I forget the exact term he used to describe his rookie season, but I believe he said something like he played like ass. when you know, like, because someone asked him, like, what, man, you're not on the all rookie team? He's like, no, man, I played like ass, but I'll be better next year. He's been better.
He has, yeah, and even Cody Seller has been better.
Yeah, and PJ Washington, too.
I mean, when you get that hot a start against the Bulls on opening night, look, 27 points in his debut. He was great, 7 threes, NBA record.
Yeah.
You don't get a better start to your career than that.
No.
And I think for him, that's been a game that he's been able to live off of and just kind of build confidence from that.
For sure.
What surprises me the most and what I'm most impressed about when it comes to the Hornets is after the Bulls win, they lost 3 straight and by a lot of points. They lost by 22 to Minnesota, lost by 19 to the Lakers, 15 to the Clippers. Like, that's 3 significant losses in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it's against, you know, better teams, but even so, and they did come back. And they win 3 straight against the Kings and the Warriors and Pacers. I know it's not world beaters, but for a bad team to be able to come back after that kind of slide, that's impressive regardless of how you look at him. And you have to grade them on a curve on some level.
Yeah.
Because they were just expected to be so much worse.
Right.
What's interesting is bad teams, and we've talked about this, bad teams will take a lot of threes to kind of even the balance.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the Brooklyn Nets do it a couple years back. They just started to launch a ton of threes and found themselves in ball games that they had no business being in.
Yep.
We're seeing the same with the Hornets now, but with the slight change that some of those guys, like you mentioned, Devontae Graham and even Dwayne Bacon as well, like some of those guys who were not expected to deliver to the same extent that they are, have showed up to be ready and solid ball players.
Yeah.
So that's just giving them this additional boost. And quite frankly, they're looking very intriguing. I mean, look, Devontae Graham right now, I would argue, is in the sixth man of the year conversation. Again, everyone's picking Lou Williams, but here's a guy who's averaging 17-7, grabbing four boards and hitting 42% from three and getting to the line five times a night. And I would argue is actually playing pretty sound team-oriented defense. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a sixth man candidate in my eyes.
Even if he doesn't win sixth man, because Lou is obviously going to win it.
Ugh.
Most improved player. He could be in there. I know
second year guy.
I know, but he's a second round pick.
Oh no, he fits one criteria absolutely.
Yeah, not a lot.
But I mean, I'm just going off of what Matt Moore told us because he was an actual voter, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they've gotten wise to the whole second year guy.
I think that should apply to early round picks, lottery picks, whatever. But if a second round pick is averaging 17 points after averaging 5 last year, he deserves to be in that mix. I'm not saying he should win. I could get
behind that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, no one saw this leap coming from Devontae Graham this year.
I could definitely get behind that. I'm also, like, if I should prioritize my two rules, it would also be the lottery pick thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one I have the biggest problem with. I would be okay with amending this one. Absolutely. If you're a second-round guy or an undrafted guy and you come in out of nowhere and do crazy stuff like Devontae Graham is doing, mm-hmm. fine by me.
Yeah.
By the way, I know that we had an awards discussion. I already know we talked about Luka, but I actually forgot to mention this because I had a discussion, a very interesting discussion with someone on a Danish Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, should Luka have won Rookie of the Year considering he was a professional?
Much like should Ben Simmons have won Rookie of the Year, even though he wasn't actually a rookie?
Well, see, there's a difference. He missed a year due to injury. Yes, he was allowed to be on the bench and all that, but he didn't have professional playing experience, mm-hmm. with the emphasis on playing because he was injured.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, it's just with the... I think, actually, this guy was responding to our podcast for a couple of months back, and or weeks back. I don't even know when we recorded it. But it's an interesting idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have all these made up rules for, like you said,
mm-hmm.
MIP,
yep.
or six man,
yep.
or whatever. But also, like, for Rookie of the Year, why? I mean, why not Luka in that sense that he was a pro?
No,
should he even have been eligible?
Well, here's my awards question this year: could Pascal Siakam win Most Improved Player 2 years in a row?
I mean, he kind of should, right?
At this point, given his start to the season, I think it, like, I mean, it's so early, but like, if I'm thinking of most improved guys, it's him, Brandon Ingram, Devontae Graham are my top three in some order.
I mean, he's raised his scoring average over the past 2 years by 20 points.
Yeah. He's taken a full on star leap this year. Like, he is a no brainer all-star right now.
And remember when people were like, do you want to max him? Are we sure you want to max him?
Who would be stupid enough to say something like that? I cannot imagine.
No. You cannot fathom? No.
Nope. He's going to need to be better, or even better, because Serge Ibaka sprained his ankle, I believe, last night. He was in a walking boot after the game. Sounds like he's going to miss some time. Kyle Lowry also fractured his thumb, I believe, and is probably looking at a few weeks out. So... That Raptors team is, they were already playing a very thin rotation, and now you're down two guys. Like, Siakam might have to average 35 for the next few weeks.
And he might be able to do it. Here's a statistical anomaly of Siakam.
What's that?
He's played 277 minutes. Mm-hmm. He has one block.
Oh.
That's weird. It doesn't matter whatsoever. He more than makes up for it everywhere else on the court. Like, sure. He's shooting 95% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
For example, like, in hitting over 40 from three and, like, rebounding and all that. But that's just weird. Like, where did that come from?
Here's another fun Pascal Siakam stat. As a rookie, in 859 minutes, he scored 229 points. This year, in 277 minutes, he has scored 223 points.
Yep.
Seems pretty good.
It is. It is. I like it. That's very, very good. He also hit 1-3 in his rookie season, and he's at 19 this year already.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, God. No, you're right. This is what I'm talking about. You're right. That's a legit question. If he won MIP before, does that mean he's automatically, you know, out of the running for winning in a second year in a row? I don't think he should be.
Right. No, I don't think he should be automatically out of it. And he's going to need to keep this level of play up to be in that conversation because of guys like Ingram and Devontae Graham, who are going to have, like, Ingram didn't come from zero, but, like, Devontae Graham came from zero to where he is. So,
right.
Do you buy Charlotte moving forward, given the fact, you know, as you mentioned, they got blasted by every good team they've played so far?
So this comes down again to momentum, as I talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
I think, given that they've won four games and they're in a place where they didn't imagine being, like, at 500,
mm-hmm.
I think this is what's going to drive them for the rest of the year. They're going to look at, okay, we had a much better start to the season than we thought. Let's see how far we can take it. And if we drop off at some point, then so be it. We're still going to be playing above expectations.
Yeah.
Like, everything from here on a certain level is gravy. Like, I don't even remember if it was you and I, you or me, I should say, who said that this team might not win 20.
Yeah.
Meaning that one of us had the opinion that this team would win at most 19 games.
Right.
They've already won four.
Right.
In eight games.
Yeah.
So their trajectory is way more positive than we thought. Now, granted, they could totally drop off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
But just this start in and of itself is a success. So I think they're going to try to build on it and just carry it through.
Yeah, I mean, they have... Tonight they play New Orleans, then they got Philly tomorrow on the second night of a back-to-back, then home against Memphis, home against Detroit, road...
They could beat Philly.
I mean, anyone could at this point.
You're such a Nancy.
No, I'm not. I'm not... I'm the one person on Sixers Twitter who isn't freaking out right now. I'm pissed about last night. Last night was the first game that pissed me off this year, which is probably a record for the Sixers. It took eight games into the season to get mad.
Yeah, well, you're going to be extra mad when Devontae Graham finishes with 35 and 17.
Probably. Hey, man, Raul Neto is going to lock him down. He's going to end his MIP case right there. So they do Memphis, Detroit, at New York, at Toronto, at Brooklyn, at Washington, versus Chicago, at Miami, two against Detroit. Like, they have a couple winnable games coming up. I think of the teams we've discussed today, I still don't think the Hornets are going to make the playoffs. I think it is indicative that every time they've played a good team, they've gotten their brains beaten in. And as much as we joke about the Sixers losing, like, oh my God, if the Sixers do not beat the Charlotte Hornets at home with the Hornets coming off the second game of a back-to-back, everyone,
we would have to do an emergency podcast.
All Sixers fans listening right now, do not be on Twitter if they do lose that game, because it's just going to be the worst possible suckhole in the world. Anyone who hates Sixers fans or enjoys crapping on them, you're going to have a field day tomorrow night. So, fair warning there. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, New Orleans tonight is winnable just because of all the injuries. I don't think they beat Philly. Memphis is winnable. Detroit could be if Blake Griffin isn't back yet. The Knicks, always winnable. So, you know, they have a couple winnable games coming up. But, yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, especially that one against Philly.
It's going to get tougher from there. I still don't think this is a playoff team, but they're better than I thought. They have, you know, Malik Monk hasn't even been doing that much.
God damn it. You just stole my point here, because I was about to say, if I told you before the season that they would be 4-4 after 8 games and Malik Monk had not been a factor, what would you have said? Because
if you told me they were 4-4 before the season, I would say, "Oh, Malik Monk took the leap."
Exactly. Yeah. And he's basically been what he's been for the first 2 years, like a 7-point score.
Yeah.
It's been bad. I look, we talked about Wiggins before and Wiggins Island. I'm slowly removing myself from Malik Monk Island. I was so high on this guy, like, coming in.
He's been
such a disappointment so far, and I don't know what it is. Like, from a strength and weaknesses perspective, like, he can shoot and he's supremely athletic.
Yeah.
That should just fit in today's league. And especially, like, 10 years ago, this guy would have been like, "Oh, is he a point guard? Is he a shooting guard?" Like, nowadays, it doesn't matter. I don't know what's going on.
You know,
this should be his league.
You know what he needs?
Oh, no.
He needs to play next to Nikola Jokic.
That's actually not bad.
Right? He could fit the Jamal Murray mold very easily, but I think because they don't have, I mean, no one has a Nikola Jokic except for one team. But
right.
Yeah, I think that's probably the role you could see him in more easily.
Or he's the guy Dallas should look for.
That's a good one. Yeah. I'd be all about that. Yeah. Hashtag free Malik Monk.
Yeah. Oh, look, if the Mavs at the trade deadline go out and acquire both Thragnes Ilikina and Malik Monk, I'm back in.
Oh, I'm super in at that point. Yeah.
Yep.
I wouldn't be back in because I've been cautiously out so far.
But... Oh, I mean, I would be back in on, or back on Malik Monk Island.
Oh, yeah. Oh, if he could play next to Luka? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, look, just the amount of open shots that he will... potentially clank.
Well, on that note, that's a good place to wrap up, Mort. So thank you all to listening. As always, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Go watch Eddie. I can't even figure out how you haven't watched this movie yet. It's about the Knicks being bad.
It's because I'm not a boomer, Mort.
All right. That comeback was so good. I'm actually going to forgive you for not watching it. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, talk soon, man.
Later.